moving all around the Taipei area.
Oh, this always feels good.
It's 5:30 in the afternoon here in Kathmandu, Nepal.
Okay, just a few hundred steps to go, and I'm at the top of the platform here of Swayambhunath, the monkey temple.
I was drinking a mixture of beer, a rice wine, and I am really feeling it now. I am up at 3:30 in the morning. Go to a tuna auction.
I am here in Mumbai, India.
And I'm here in Tokyo, Japan for Sakura, the cherry blossoms.
It's 7:45 in the morning here in Phnom Penh, and I'm just going to try to cross the street. I'm going to try on a crosswalk.
It's 6:15 in the morning, and I think I'm one of the only people in Ta Prohm. This is the Tomb Raider Temple.
Hi, I'm John Sabo, and this is the Far East Travels Podcast.
Hey there, welcome to the podcast. And in this episode, I'm going to do a rundown on places you can actually travel to, but not as a tourist. Well, there's actually a couple places you could go as a tourist, but I really don't recommend it at this time. I'll get into that a little bit later. Hey, what a better time than to do a life change or blow up your life during a pandemic, right? Just leave everything behind and start fresh and new and somewhere in Asia. I'm going to talk about that in this episode of the podcast, as well as revisit Penang, Malaysia and Kuala Lumpur. The last trip I did to another part of Asia besides Cambodia last year, when we were still all traveling. So that'll be coming up later on. So a few more shout outs today. I got another podcast review from Australia, which is really cool. So I want to thank RJ01. Such an inspiration. Great podcast, John. Just the thing to listen to and dream of that next awesome trip to Southeast Asia. Thanks. And thank you so much. And my heart goes out to all of you that are restricted right now by things that you can do, maybe going out, doing all of the Christmas type of celebrations that, you know, you're really longing to do, but you're not. But, you know, it's only going to be for one Christmas, hopefully not the rest of your life Christmas. So just keep that in mind. But I do feel for all you guys. You know, I walk around here in Ho Chi Minh City or Saigon, and I feel so blessed that, you know, really, there's a lot of things that we can do here because there was a lot of measures taken place early on to contain the pandemic. And even though we've had the odd community case in the last few months, it's been very easy to move around here and live life almost normally, although we still need to take precautions. So my heart goes out to all of you. Now, if you want to help the podcast and help others find it, the best way to do that, or one of the best ways to do that, is to write a review in the iTunes store. So if you have an iTunes account, simple to do. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Just follow that link. Make sure you're signed into your iTunes account, then rate the podcast out of 5 stars, write a review, and you'll help others discover the Far East Travels podcast. And then I also wanted to give a shout out to a lot of people that are listening right now, listening to the podcast from Vancouver, Canada, of course, here in Ho Chi Minh, Kathmandu, Nepal, in the United States, Boulder and Denver, Colorado. Thousand Oaks, California, along with many other cities in the States, Stockholm, Sweden, the Philippines, Romania. Thank you so much. If I didn't list your name, it's only because I don't have it, or your country. The stats that I get only offer up so many countries, and it would be based on, you know, how many people are listening in that country. So obviously the countries that rate higher, like US, Canada, UK, Australia, I'm going to have more stats available. But if you're listening and I haven't mentioned your country or your corner of the world, do send me an email. Let me know where you're listening from, or if you've been listening for a while, would love to hear from you, john@fareasttravels.com. Or you can always communicate with me via Instagram. I think that's one of the best ways you can do it. And I'm John Sabo's Far East Travels on Instagram. So check that out. Okay. So I want to do this list of countries that currently foreigners can enter under certain restrictions. So let me just pull this up here. And I have this list. Now, pretty much mostly tourism is off the table for most countries right now in any part of Asia. But there are some places that are open. Again, I personally do not recommend casual or tourist-type travel at this time. I just think it's too risky. There's too many things that can go wrong. And, you know, I don't personally recommend it, but I can't stop people from going. And the idea of this podcast is to share information. Whether I think it's right to go or not, it's really up to you to make that decision. And there are a lot of countries hurting out there right now. Now, as far as, you know, people that have relationships in some of these countries, they're used to spending months at a time. I'm not opposed to people going back to these places if they're going to spend a significant amount of time there, if their presence there has an impact on their significant others or people that they have relationships with. I'm certainly not opposed to that. But casual travel, I would say, is very risky at this time. So let's kick it off with Nepal. Now, Nepal relies heavily on tourist dollars. I mean, it's about 20% or more of the country's GDP. So they are dying and desperate for tourist dollars. But there's been, you know, serious outbreaks of COVID-19 in Nepal this year. But originally, we had heard that they were just going to open to trekkers and mountaineers this fall. But according to a story I've seen in the Nepal Times in the last week, the country's open to all tourists if you're able to get there. But it's going to be difficult to board the plane. And some people I've heard from Europe have been turned away, even with like proper letters confirming visas. And there's some miscommunications internally with the visa people and others in Kathmandu or in Nepal. So even if you get some kind of proper paperwork, it still could be tough getting on the plane. But you should probably visit an embassy or consulate or consult with them that are the one that's closest to you if you are really adamant in visiting Nepal. And then you'd want to secure a visa beforehand. I think that would be the best thing to do. And then, of course, you'll have to have a negative COVID test confirmation prior to your arrival. And you'll have to quarantine in a hotel or in your hotel in Kathmandu for 7 days. And then I believe you have to have another COVID test after that before you're allowed out there. And really, I mean, if you're going to trek, I mean, I would do a camping trek. I don't know if I would want to be staying in guest houses with other people coming and going. I mean, if everybody's been tested, but that's kind of risky itself. So that's the situation in Nepal right now. I really feel for all of those people working as trekkers. I know several of them. I keep in touch with several of them, and I know this has been absolutely devastating to them and their families. But it is risky, and you need to check with the consulate, embassy, and airlines to make sure that if you were going to go, that everything's okay. Now, if you're one of these people that works for an NGO or you're planning on doing some work or volunteer work and you were set to do that anyways, then, you know, you'll need to do all of those things as well. But as I said, for people going to these countries right now on a long-term situation, I don't see the harm in that as long as you know what you're getting into. Okay, now Taiwan, a place that I spent lots of time over the last few years, is definitely not open to tourists right now. And actually, just this week, they got their first community case in 253 days. Can you believe that? One of the safest, if not the safest place on the planet right now to stay away from catching COVID-19. They did get a community case. It was with contracted through, a pilot that apparently, I guess, airline staff don't have to go through the same rigors of quarantining and things like that other people do. And this pilot had COVID and was passed on to somebody local, and that's how it started. But Taiwan has one of the best records for contact tracing and obviously containing the pandemic. So I'm sure they'll get that under control right away. But what a lot of people don't realize is even though Taiwan is closed off to tourists, there are ways that you can go there long term. Now, I don't know all the particulars about securing a job there, but I'm sure, like other countries right now, it may be possible to secure, say, an English teaching job there if you have the proper credentials and you have a work permit in advance, or you have a promissory letter from your employer and some kind of a work contract, then it might be possible. But it is possible to go and study there right now if you want to take courses at a university. And I will tell you something. Taiwan loves to have foreigners in their universities. They absolutely love you to be in university there, and they love you to be there long term. So scholarships are available to many. So if this is something that you're thinking of doing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be learning Mandarin, but they do hand out scholarships for people to learn Mandarin. Now, maybe 2-3 years ago, some guy was thinking of buying my bike in Taiwan, and I met him, and he'd just come to Taiwan, and he was from Canada, I believe, and he was coming as a student, but he was an English teacher. But he was able to get, at first, a 3-month scholarship, all paid for, from one of the universities in Taipei. And then, while he was conversing or going back and forth with his liaison at the university, they all of a sudden said, hey, we have another 3 months we can give you as well. So would you like a 6-month scholarship to attend our university? And of course, he took it. So that is one way that you could, if you were planning on doing studying anyways abroad, it is still possible to do that at this time. And what a safer place to do that. Now, if you're attending university, you think, how do you sustain yourself? Well, you can work according to the visa that you would get, but it's very limited amount of time per week that you're allowed to work. And that may have changed. I don't know. I don't have the updated rules, but you could only maybe 2-3 years ago work up to 9 hours a week. And that would, of course, could help you supplement your time in Taipei or Taiwan. So as I said, it might be possible to gain entry through company or employment sponsorship there, but you'd have to look into that yourself. Now, the Maldives has been open to tourism for quite a while now. Now, they have the luxury, of course, of those beautiful remote islands. So it's really easy to kind of quarantine people. It's actually a natural quarantine situation when you're traveling there. It's really you're going to quarantine in a beautiful resort. So you have to have a negative COVID test prior to 72 hours before arriving. And you are restricted to your resort, and you can only stay in one place when you visit the Maldives. So you're going to be flying in, and then you're going to be going to your resort, and then you're just going to be in that resort for that time. For some people, that's fine. But that has been possible now for the last few months. Now, China was completely closed off for a while, and they still are closed off to tourists. But now residents, or people that hold residency and a visa, can enter back into China, because there were some problems with family from other countries like the U.S. and Canada that were living there and wanted to go back to China, and they weren't at that time, but I believe they're now. So you'd have to just make those arrangements and make sure that you have all the proper documents, and you'll have to quarantine, and you have to pay for your own quarantine as well. Cambodia has actually been open for a while as well. If you have a job lined up and the proper work visa in place, now your employer would probably do all of that. So that is possible to go to Cambodia, but there's several things that you have to do. And you'll have to do a test before you leave. You'll have to do a test on arrival. And here's the hitch, that if you are on a plane with a bunch of people and you all go to do the COVID test and one person comes up with a positive test, then everybody has to quarantine for 2 weeks. So that's why they get a $2,000 deposit from you before you come, because that $2,000 deposit is going to pay for your hotel stay and food for that 2 weeks while you're under quarantine. So that's what you have to do if you want to go into or go back to Cambodia. Apparently, Japan is planning to reopen to foreigners soon in phases. So mostly, I've seen the list. I'm not going to list all the countries off, but it's mostly countries in East Asia and Southeast Asia. And it'll only be for the purpose of business at first. And then the next phase will include students and so on. So I suppose because they have the Olympics coming up, they're probably eager to transition to get sort of some kind of normalcy back into the country to prepare for when they have the Olympics. Bali in Indonesia was planning on reopening to tourists, but that's been put on hold for now, probably not till sometime in 2021. Malaysia is open for medical tourism from some countries at this time. And then one last place, now this is not in East Asia, Southeast Asia, or even South Asia, but Uzbekistan is open to tourists. And get this, they'll even compensate you with $3,000 if you catch COVID-19 while you're in the country. So I'm going to play a couple of highlights from my last trip to Malaysia, and that was just in 2019. Just last year, I visited in June, Kuala Lumpur and Penang. Now, I'd been wanting to go to Penang for some time now, and in 2017, I was there, but just in the airport, and I'll tell you what happened. I was planning on going to Malaysian Borneo, which I ended up doing, going to Kuching, Sarawak, and had a wonderful time. But I first arrived in Kuala Lumpur, or was set to arrive in Kuala Lumpur, and I took a red-eye flight from Taipei, a midnight flight, and we were to descend into Kuala Lumpur airport, airport number 2, because that's the budget airport. And we were sent to descend into the airport, or the runway, about 4:45 in the morning. And the weather had been kind of rough, so we had some turbulence coming in, and the turbulence continued as we were descending, which was unusual. I've never felt that before, so it felt kind of uncomfortable, a little bit funny. And then as we were getting closer and closer into descending, right, or doing a landing on the runway, the pilot immediately pulled up, and we ended up going back up to elevation. And then he came on just a minute later and explained what had happened. There were crosswinds that they were going to try it again. They were going to circle around Kuala Lumpur and then give it another try. And then if that didn't work, they were going to go to Penang. We were going to have to land in Penang. So we actually didn't end up taking another chance at landing at KL. And about a half hour later, we had a nice smooth descent into Penang Airport. Now, here's the frustrating thing. I would have been completely frustrated if I was Malaysian. I mean, just furious, because there was people on that flight that were going to catch a flight to Penang anyways. So they were really close to home. But Malaysian immigration would not let them leave the airport. They had to go back to KL and then come back on a plane. So I guess for whatever reason, even applying to locals, you could not enter a port that you weren't scheduled or officially supposed to enter at. So all of those poor people that were pleading with immigration to just let them go were not allowed to go. They had to get back on the plane. And we had to wait like almost, I think, 3 hours before we were able to fly back to KL. They had to actually bring a new plane or a new crew and plane in from KL because the other guys had sort of finished out their shift. They couldn't fly anymore. So we had to wait for this plane to come in from KL. So we finally got on the plane. And so then that was my plans to switch and be flexible were kiboshed. And I ended up doing my trip to Sarawak anyway. So last year I went to Penang. I loved it. It's a really interesting place. A lot of Asian tourists go to Penang. I'd say like mostly it's Asian tourists. There are a few Westerners that do go there. It's really cheap to fly there. I think that's one of the reasons why. Another reason why they get a lot of Chinese tourists, because a lot of people can speak Mandarin or Hokkien in Penang, because it's one of the few places, if not the only place in Malaysia, where there's more ethnic Chinese than ethnic Malay. So the ethnic Chinese outnumber the ethnic Malay. So now as a Westerner, it's just fine to go there because all of these people speak really good English. It's almost like their official language, basically. So, I mean, you can go to one of these food stalls and talk with one of these aunties or uncles. And if you don't want chicken in your noodles, they'll leave it out. You can speak English and they'll understand everything you say. They'll even kind of read in between the lines and they'll know that, okay, if he's asking not to have chicken, I better tell him that the broth is made out of chicken, which happened in my case. So it's really easy to communicate there. It's not always easy to do that in other parts of East Asia or Southeast Asia in that situation. Taiwan, you would not be able to do that as easily. It's possible in some of the tourist night markets, but not as easily as I found in Penang. So it's really easy as a Westerner to go there. And of course, it was a colony, a British colony at one time. So they have that history with them. And what's really nice is actually the locals fought to keep a lot of the British names and heritage of Georgetown and Penang. The locals wanted to keep that. So they had changed a lot of names over in the past in Malaysia from the old British names to whatever ethnic names they choose or chose. But a lot of the street names and of course, the Georgetown is still called Georgetown. And it's a wonderful, beautiful town. I mean, the colonial buildings are amazing. Lots of little places you can just stroll around and feel like you're in a town that's 100 years old. Lots of heritage. And then just the mix of the new cultures, the ethnic Chinese that have been there forever. And then the Indian culture there, the Malay culture, the food is one of the best places for sure to eat in Malaysia. I mean, you have the ocean next to you. You have all of the different cooking styles and the ingredients and the bounty of, it's a bounty of Malaysia is all can be all had there. So wonderful place. If you're a food lover, you have to go there. Now, just a few things about Penang, and I think I might have mentioned this in a podcast before, is that your money doesn't go as far as accommodations go as it could in other places in Malaysia. Let's just talk about Malaysia, let alone Southeast Asia. And some of the reason is that there's a lot of heritage buildings there, a lot of beautiful shop houses, and they haven't been able to convert a lot of land over to newer modern style hotels with the amenities that you might like. So there's going to be a lot of guest houses that are available in the lower budget range, and you may have to share a bathroom. You won't have your own bathroom just because of the house or the inn or the style of building does not lend itself to have all of that plumbing in there. And I have seen places converted, and it's kind of like, $50 or $60 a night, and you have this room, not terribly large. And then in the corner of the room, there's this ensuite. It looks like it's just been dropped in there. So it's kind of not, it's okay. I mean, it's better than, it would be an upgrade for sure from what would be below that. But I mean, I think, your money goes a lot further in other cities. But that's probably just because of the fact that, they don't have in the heart of, say, Georgetown, they don't have the land to convert over to newer hotels. Now, there are newer hotels that you can stay there, but they're priced much higher than some of the budget places that you could probably get in even a city like Kuala Lumpur. So your money, I think accommodation wise, would go a little bit further in Kuala Lumpur than in Penang, in my opinion. And that's the experience that I had. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. I think that if you had 3 or 4 nights there, I think you'd be happy. I don't think there's that much more that you can do or see there that would warrant staying there longer unless you have family there. Or you just want to use it as a base and travel around that part of Malaysia. But other than that, I think 3 or 4 nights would be great. And they have these coffee shops there. And the coffee shops are what they are. They're coffee shops. So the building is set out and there's tables everywhere inside and maybe even outside. And they have somebody that'll come and take your order for coffee or tea or any kind of drinks. And then there are separate food carts that are operated by individuals. And there might be a half a dozen, there might be 10, 12, maybe even more, depending on how big the coffee shop is. So you just go up to that food cart and you would order your noodle dish or whatever you're having, dumplings, noodles, whatever it is. And you talk to that person and they will bring the dish to you when it's ready, right to your table, wherever you're sitting in the coffee shop, and then you pay them then, and you can converse with them if you want the dish modified at all. They're absolutely more than happy to do that. At least that's the experience that I found. And then the person, of course, will bring you your drinks from the coffee shop as well. So you can go to these different stalls or carts and order all kinds of different food and then have them all brought to your table, and you can mix dishes and have just a fantastic time. And then there are people that have been established in Penang for a long time or in Georgetown that have their own brick and mortar little restaurant. Might be not be big, it might be kind of a humble little place, but they're famous for some kind of a noodle dish or whatever it is, and they'll have their own little place. So there's kind of a mix of the coffee shops and then those style restaurants. And then, of course, there's lots of higher end, upper sort of tier restaurants as well that you can enjoy. But here is a little bit of taste of my last trip to Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, and Penang.
Welcome to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia at Petronas Towers. Always a pleasure to be here. Well, it's hot, of course, it's the tropics. Brutally hot. I'm right here, maybe not the most comfortable time of day, high noon, but a good time to show you guys these towers, which are the 16th highest buildings in the world. Tower 1 and Tower 2. I'm going to back off a little bit here. It's quiet right now because there's usually lots of people around here, but it's quiet right now because it's lunchtime. So there was just a couple of big tour groups here just a couple minutes ago. These are just really one of my favorite buildings in the world. And I've been up on the tour here before. It's a organized guided tour. You can't just walk in there. And it is a nice day. It's rainy season, so we will get some showers probably later. Like yesterday, we had some pretty heavy showers in the afternoon. Anyways, it's about $25 to take the 45-minute tour here. It is a nice view. It's actually not the best view in KL. The KL Tower is actually better, just over this way. Actually, you can see just the little antenna spiral coming up right there. That's actually a better view of Kuala Lumpur. But one of my favorite parts is being on the bridge, because you know you can see it on, see both sides from it, and you get to go up to the 86th floor. It has 88 floors here, both the towers. This one was built by the Japanese. This one was built by the Koreans. They had to hire two different companies to get the thing built on time, and it took I think about 4 years in all. It was finished in '97, and. What else can I say? 97 is the highest building in the world from 1997 to 2004. And then Taipei 101 became the highest building after that in 2004. And then Taipei 101 was the tallest building in the world right up until 2010. And since then, the Burj Khalifa in Dubai has been the highest building in the world. But these are just gorgeous. Been in lots of different movies. Entrapment with Sean Connery. They did a lot of stuff on the Sky Bridge. I like being on the Sky Bridge, Claire. That was one of my favorite spots of the tour, to be honest with you. About 45 minutes long. This is actually the best view right here. So not very many people here right now, but like I said, it's noon. Did you say the 60? Yeah, it's the 60th tallest. Both, they're tied. Of course, they're the exact same height. So the 16th highest buildings in the world now. And Landmark 81 in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam is the tallest building in Southeast Asia. So up until then, this used to be the tallest structure in Southeast Asia. Are you saying the KL TV Tower was built for the Commonwealth Games? Yeah, there it is right there. You can see it right there. Now that actually, I think I'm gonna try to get up there for this this time around in KL, because I think I'll be here for a couple more days. And then I'll head up to Penang. Welcome to Penang, Malaysia. This is actually Georgetown. And I just stumbled on this cafe here. A little mini hawker center. And I'm going to have some charkway tea out here in a second.
you know you're in a good place when it's hard to find seating. You know that this is good. This is good. And this is, I had Charcoal Tiao yesterday. This version I'm liking better. It's not, the other one yesterday was a little bit on the dry side. Yeah, there is actually just the I think the next street over, they have a couple of, one is a very famous chendol stand, which is a dessert, right? And it's like coconut milk and jellies and stuff like that. There is a very famous one just a street over from here. And then there's another shop that opened up on the same street as well that apparently locals are liking more. But that is, yeah, definitely I will try that later. There's been, ever since when I've been, ever since I got here yesterday or the day before, I've been walking by and there's just always a line up there. Because, you know, a lot of Asians come to Penang. It's so cheap to fly here. I got a flight out of here. The base rate for my flight from here to Ho Chi Minh City on Saturday was $35. So there's some really cheap fares throughout the region. There's a lot of people fly in from China, you know, other parts of Southeast Asia, Taiwan, and so they come here. And especially the Chinese, ethnic Chinese will love to come here because the biggest population in Penang is ethnic Chinese. So they still speak, you know, a lot of them speak Mandarin or Hokkien here. So it's easy for people to say, because I was trying to talk to some people, I think, from China yesterday, and they couldn't speak any English. But they'll come to places like this because they know they can communicate. So there's a lot of Asian tourists that come here. There are Westerners here, but I think far more Asian tourists. But it is in Malaysia, it's the highest density of ethnic Chinese anywhere else. So, I mean, overall, ethnic Malays outnumber the ethnic Chinese, but here it's the flip-flop. So it's a little bit different here. So thus the food reflects that as well. But you can still get Malay food here, lots of choices for Malay food, Indian food, amazing. I went for Kerala Indian, South Indian food last night. It was just amazing and so cheap. So that's the one thing. This dish was ringgit. ringgit is, I don't know, like about two U.S. dollars or a little more than two U.S. dollars, something like that. Is that, I don't like the horn. People have these really loud, obnoxious horns here. Yes, they have good coffee here. If you want really, really good coffee, then you want to go to a real cafe coffee place. The coffee here is okay, but if you want like high quality designer style coffee, then you're better off to go to a proper cafe, which they have plenty of those here. People love coffee in Malaysia.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. You can support the podcast by becoming a patron for as little as a couple dollars a month. All of it helps support the podcast and me continuing to share travel advice, information, and hopefully inspiration from Asia. So I'll leave a link in the show notes. Just follow that link and check out all the offers. Thanks in advance. And don't forget, you can stay connected with me a few different ways. You can either just send me an email, john@fareasttravels.com, or you can connect with me on Instagram, John Sabo's Far East Travels on Instagram, or follow me on one of my Facebook pages. There is a Far East Travels podcast page, as well as the Mothership Far East Travels page on Facebook. So check those out and follow me now and stay connected. Thank you so much, and I wish you all a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah. And when we all start traveling again, I wish you safe travels, namaste, tashi delay, and peace.